While living in Texas, I have stood in the midst of a rich crop of cotton. It was planted before the summer, and it grew throughout the summer, and at the end, you have these lush rows of cotton, and they're as high as a man's shoulder, maybe my head, but a taller man's shoulders, and they're as wide as three men, and they're lush, and the cotton blossoms that's the goal. They've burst, and they're white, and they're billowy, and they're fluffy, and you can see them throughout. The farmer stands there. I've been there as he's directing the traffic of the harvesters and the big bins on trucks that they throw the cotton into, and he has done so much work to bring this harvest to the point at which it is. I mean, we almost can't imagine how much they stress and worry and think about and how much effort they have put into this. And yet, if that cotton stays in the ground and it freezes, or if hail comes and knocks it all down, or if it's not harvested just right, guess what? All of that work means absolutely nothing. The crop that has been planted and that has been tended and that has grown must now be harvested. Well, for all of those who seek to speak intimately with God, the Psalms provide for us a rich crop of prayer and praise and lament that is just waiting to be harvested. I want to talk to you about the Psalms today. The Psalms are inspired scripture from God, but it's not God speaking to man. This is man speaking to God, and then God has placed his inspiration and his approval on these words. And so if we want to know how to speak to God, if we want to know how to speak to one another, if we want to know how to encourage one another, we have 150 Psalms, the backbone of the Old Testament. We have a rich harvest that awaits us if we will spend the time dwelling in them. I'd like to introduce to you and share some of my thoughts for approaching the Psalms today. The Psalms offer a bountiful harvest. This collection of hymns and prayers, that's what it is, it's songs and it's prayers. They span the history of Israel. There's history woven throughout. There's law woven throughout the Psalms. There's prophecy and there's wisdom to be gleaned. Boy, the Psalms are timeless, aren't they? I mean, is there not a person here who cherishes to read the Psalms, who goes to them? When you need comfort, where's the first place often that you go? This was the prayers and the hymns of Israel that was written and recorded over 1,000 years in the Old Testament, used in the time of the tabernacle and in the temple. Moses wrote Psalm 90, we believe, and so we know that there were Psalms being spoken and shared with as early as that. And that's just the Old Testament time. Today, even until today, so thousands and thousands of years, this harvest has been timeless. This harvest is real. We find some of the most comforting and maybe worrisome expressions in the Psalms. Turn to Psalm 119 and then to Psalm 22, and you see a contrast. In Psalm 19:1, there is praise. It says, "The heavens declare the glory of God, and the sky above proclaims his handiwork." And then you flip a few chapters over to chapter 22, verse 1, and you get panic. My God, why have you forsaken me? Why have you gone so far from saving me, from the words of my groaning? Panic to praise. We go from comfort to cursing. Psalm 23:3, "He restores my soul and leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake." What wonderful comfort. And then in Psalm 2:9, "You shall break them with a rod and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel." Comfort and cursing. We have confidence and we have questions. Psalm 23:27, verse 3, "Though an army encamp against me, my heart shall not fear. Though war arise against me, yet I will be confident." Psalm 2, verse 1, "Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain. Such a real experience. People where they are in life, being honest and being joyful and being sad and lamenting and praising. What a wonderful harvest we have. The Psalms are well known, as we've said before. They're often quoted. They're appended to many of our New Testaments today. And so how may we harvest the Psalms today? What is the potential of the Psalms in the Christian community? How do we approach these wonderful, inspired words? Let me offer you this definition. The Psalms are the verbal expressions that reflect what God has done in the past, that wrestle with what God is doing now, and that request His intervention, His involvement in the future. Psalms are meant to be verbally expressed, and we use them to think about what God has done and how wonderful He has been. And we wrestle with what He is doing in our life now. God, I know You were there in the past, but I'm not sure You're here now. And we call Him to be with us in the future. What's one of the challenging things about the Psalms? Who here enjoyed poetry class in high school, junior high? We have a few, right? But for everyone else, are you kidding me? I'd rather write the five-page essay than a five-line of poetry. Challenging. You've got this cryptic language that is hard to wrap your mind around. Poetry can be frustrating. Poetry can be confusing. Some people think Shakespeare is amazing, and some people would be happy if they never had to think about Shakespeare again. But there is a purpose behind the poetic nature in the Psalms. What does the poetry of the Psalms do for us today? We need to remember that, well, even outside of America and civilized world today, but thousands and thousands of years ago, the skills of reading and writing were not nearly as pervasive as they are today. Now, that doesn't mean people weren't intelligent. There are plenty of people who are less literate, but are still intelligent individuals. But people didn't always have the skills to pick up the Psalms and to read them, or to pick up the law and to read it. They perhaps didn't have that. And even if they did have the skills of reading and writing, private ownership of books was not what it is today. You know, we take books for granted so often. We take books for granted, and yet back then, how did they know what God had written down? Not everyone had a copy of His Word to carry around like they did. As we studied in the book of Numbers, where was the law and the writings of God kept? Well, it wasn't kept in every household of the Israelites or every tent. It was kept by the ark in the middle of the camp. That's where it was kept. Not everyone had access to it by means of reading it. And so how do you reflect upon God's work and on His promises without the text in front of you? How do we express ourselves in prayer and in praise to God without His Word in front of us? Well, the people would gather, as Kirkland shared with us. They would gather in the holy convocation, in the holy congregation, the assembly, and the law and the prophets and the Psalms would be read aloud. It's one reason why we reread in our worship together. We read the book of Jeremiah because it's following the tradition of how these scriptures had been passed on in the past. But if you were an Israelite and you went to the public worship in with the tabernacle or at the temple, and you didn't have these books at home and you heard it read to you, what do you have to do with that as you travel home? Well, you got to remember it, right? Who here's got a mind like a steel trap? Who here has an excellent memory in which you remember every last thing that you hear? This is where the poetry comes in. The word was supposed to be spoken publicly, but then it had to be retained through story and narrative. It had to be retained through poetry and repetition. Let me ask you this. How many books have you memorized in your life? How many song lyrics have you memorized in your life? Went bowling with the teenagers last week at the lock-in. And we're bowling, and there's crazy neon lights going on, and there's songs being played, and the kids are speaking the words to the songs. I don't even think they know they're doing it. I just think they know these songs, but they have countless lyrics memorized, because when it's put in poetry and song and it's set to music, we remember that, don't we? Let me ask you this. How many scriptures do you have memorized as compared to the hymns that we sing? If you just catch a tune of the hymn, boy, you can rattle off a full song in the chorus. Many of us struggle with just the memorization of the scriptures. And so the rhyme and the alliteration and the metaphor and all of those things came together to give the Israelites something to hold on to place that in their mind so they could call it again for later usage. Let's go over to Psalm chapter 1. I'd like to read aloud Psalm chapter 1 and Psalm chapter 2. Isaac read Psalm chapter 1 for us, but I want to highlight these again. First of all, to emphasize that we should read the Psalms aloud. That's how they were written and designed. That's what the poetry was for. It's how the psalmist would plant this idea and their thoughts in their mind. But Psalm 1 and 2, because of a few characteristics, are thought of as the introduction to the Psalms. And so let's plant some ideas in our mind to help us understand the meaning of the rest of the Psalms. Psalm chapter 1. Blessed is the man who walks not in the counsel of the wicked, nor stands in the way of sinners, nor sits in the seat of scoffers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water that yields its fruit in season, and its leaf does not wither. In all that he does, he prospers. The wicked are not so, but are like chaff that the wind drives away. Therefore, the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the congregation of the righteous. For the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. Now, we lose some of the poetry in the translation into English, but we still have the simplicity and the symbolism of this psalm. Psalm 1 is about God who is just, who sees the way of the righteous and who blesses that, and who sees the way of the wicked and punishes that. He blesses the individual who meditates on his law day and night. Now, it's set forth as an absolute in Psalms, but you flip a few pages over and you see that the psalmist struggles with justice. God, I know that the righteous are supposed to be blessed, but boy, I don't see them being blessed right now. Explain this to me. There's the tension back and forth. Psalm 2. Where Psalm 1 talks about the individual and justice, Psalm 2 talks about God's sovereignty. That His will, that His way of doing things is going to succeed regardless of anything else that happens. And it is directed toward the nations. Psalm 2 verse 1. Why do the nations rage and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord and against His anointed, saying, let us burst their bonds apart and cast away their cords from us. He who sits in the heavens laughs. The Lord holds them in derision. Then He will speak to them in His wrath and terrify them in His fury, saying, as for me, I have set my king on Zion, on my holy hill. I will tell of the decree. The Lord said to me, you are my son. Today I have begotten you. Ask of me, and I will make the nations your heritage, and the ends of the earth your possession. You shall break them with a rod of iron, and dash them in pieces like a potter's vessel. Now therefore, O kings, be wise. Be warned, O rulers of the earth. Serve the Lord with fear, and rejoice with trembling. Kiss the Son, lest He be angry, and you perish in the way, for His wrath is quickly kindled. Blessed are all who take refuge in Him. God is sovereign. He defeats nations that plot against Him and His will and His Son. And so we see justice and sovereignty as two truths that are established and will be reiterated across the Psalms. But the psalmists, as I said before, they wrestle with them. God, I know you have a plan. I know you're just. But are you still there? Are you still enacting your will? Remember, the Psalms are verbal and poetic in their expression, in order that they may be planted in our mind so that we can call them up again and be molded, so our thoughts can be shaped and molded according to how it should be. How do the Psalms shape our thinking, though? I mean, we hear them, and we hear them being expounded upon. Psalms 1 and 2 talk about the idea of quiet meditation. The seed has been planted, but now in quiet meditation, this is when the soil and the plant is tended. If you see in Psalm chapter 1, verse 2, his delight is in the law of the Lord, and on his law he meditates day and night. Turn over to chapter 2. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? I'm not a Hebrew scholar. I'm not going to try and pronounce the Hebrew word for you. But plot and meditate are the same Hebrew word. We would describe them today as an onomatopoeia, right? The words that sound like what they are. We often use them for dog sounds, right? I don't know what your dog says. You know, maybe it says woof or bow wow, you know. I don't know that a dog says that. But that's what an onomatopoeia is, or hiss or buzz, right? And so it has a meaning, but it also has to do with the sound. And so what sound do you make while you're meditating or while you're plotting? I'm not going to make that sound for you now. But think about that. When you're meditating on something and you're thinking on something, perhaps there's a groan that comes out. That's the sound of this word. Perhaps the words sort of come out of your mouth as you're thinking about them intensely. When they would read this word in the Hebrew, it would be like a sound of someone thinking. Meditation, thought, focus, thinking on something, the sound of someone deep in thought. The blessed man meditates on God's law. The wicked nation plots and meditates on anything but God's law. And so when leaving the public worship, the worshiper had a choice. They could walk away and they could meditate and make the sounds of meditation, whatever those are. And they could be doing that because they're meditating on God's word, or they could be walking away and they could be meditating on perhaps something else. This is what the Psalms do. They are read verbally at worship, and they are remembered in meditation so that we can become a blessed people. The seed has been planted, and as it says in Psalm 1, it's like the man who is planted by streams of water, and that continuous stream grows the thought that has been planted in the mind, and it grows into a harvest. How did the ancient people harvest the Psalms? Psalm 1 and 2 talk of becoming a blessed person. Notice Psalm 1:1. It says, "Blessed is the man." What does it say at the end of Psalm 2? It said, "Blessed are those who take refuge in him." Through this meditation, through holding these ideas in your mind, we will become truly blessed. What is a blessing? Well, it's prosperity or happiness that is given from a greater entity to someone else. Now, there's lots of ways of being blessed, right? That maybe there's conflicting ideas. You know, is it money? Is it success? Is it popularity? Is it being connected and knowing God? The ancient Jews and the early Christians would carry the Psalms with them, and they would use the Psalms, as they do in Acts chapter 1, verse 20, for guidance when they had important decisions to make. They would use it for teaching, as they did in Acts 13, 33 through 35. In 1 Corinthians 14, we see the Psalms as edification, as building up. The Psalms shaped the very language that the Christians used with God and with one another. What does it say in Colossians 3? What does it say in Ephesians 5? We praise with psalms and hymns and spiritual songs. We speak to one another with psalms and with hymns and with spiritual songs. These are supposed to shape our thoughts and our minds, and we shape that through the meditation. It's interesting, in Matthew chapter 22, Jesus did not often, he always was right, and he always answered the questions that were brought to him. But there is only one time in which he stumps to never be asked a question again. You know where that is? Matthew chapter 22, verse 46. Notice what he uses to stump the Pharisees here. Verse 46, it says, no one could say a word in reply, and from that day on, no one dared to ask him any more questions. What had he brought to their attention that stumped them? He brought to their mind a psalm, Psalm 110. While the Pharisees were gathered together, Jesus asked them, what do you think about the Christ? Whose son is he? The son of David, they replied. He said to them, how is it then that David, speaking by the Spirit, calls him Lord? For he says, the Lord said to my Lord, sit at my right hand until I put your enemies under your feet. If then David calls him Lord, how can he be his son? Notice here how the Psalms in the Pharisees' mind, I'm sure they knew this verse, but they hadn't let it shape their way of thinking. And because of that, they couldn't even have a conversation with God. They couldn't even have a conversation with Jesus. If we want to be blessed, which I think it's knowing God and being able to have a conversation with God, then we need to have our mind shaped, and we can start in the Psalms. You can know, but if we're not meditating and being shaped, we're going to end up like the Pharisees. Jesus looks at them and he says, you have not meditated on my word. You have not carried my Father's word in your heart like you ought to. David knew who his Lord was. Do you know who your Lord is? David could speak to me freely. Are you able to speak to me freely? The Psalms enable a full expression, a fuller conversation with God and with his Son. I'd like to leave you with two ideas. The first one, how to learn a language. The second one, cows chewing their cud, okay? So we'll leave the second one for the end because that sounds a little more interesting. How do we learn a language? Has anyone here tried to learn a language? Boy, I've tried. I failed miserably. I took a Spanish class with my brother-in-law, and I studied, and I got A's on every test, and I couldn't speak the language. Jenny's brother would show up to class, and he would rarely study, and yet he got bad grades on the test, but he knew how to use the language. See, he was a performer. He was an actor. Anything that he took it in a way that was going to come out, and he was going to use it. And so he only learned a language in a way that would allow him to use it. Our knowledge must give way to meditation. Our study must give way to immersion. See, we need to keep our times of study, whether it's that 10 minutes or 20 minutes or 30 minutes or 60 minutes. We need to have that focused time in which we're putting information there. But as we leave that place, we need to be meditating on the language of God, of the Psalms. We need to be immersing ourselves throughout the day. What happens to the information we have studied that morning or that evening while we're sitting in a waiting room? What happens with that information while we're commuting to work? I spend a lot of time rocking a baby these days. What do I do with that information while I'm rocking Nathan to sleep? What do I do with that information while I'm standing in line? When time suddenly is out of our control, our mind often wanders to other things. If you're like me, I think about anxieties. I think about impatience that I have. My mind may wander to some type of fantasy, or I may just be bored. But we have to learn to use those times to focus our mind and to immerse ourselves in the language of the Psalms, I think, because they're so easily remembered and endeared to us. But we can certainly expand that also to the rest of Scripture. Now let's finish with the cow. It may seem like an odd analogy, but I think it's maybe better than Psalm 23, where we're sheep. You know, is a cow much worse than being likened to a sheep? Sheep are pretty nasty too. Let's think about the cow. Cows have a lot of downtime, don't they? A lot of standing around. Cows eat their nourishment and they swallow it. And then what happens next? They call it back up again, right? Kirkland thought he was talking about gross things. I'm going to talk about regurgitation, okay? The cow calls it up again and mulls it over some more and chews on it some more and processes it further. That's how you get the white milk from the green grass, right? It's because the cow in its downtime calls it up again to ruminate and to muse and to chew and to further expose what is necessary. We're talking about more than just good time management here. The cow's not just being efficient. It's using the quiet and the still times to rework and to draw out further nutrition. And to process that further, we need to process the things. We need to process the Psalms throughout our day as we're waiting. As time has been taken from us, we need to be processing these Psalms that are so akin to being memorized. Like a tree always planted by a stream, we must learn to delight in being planted in the Psalms. We must immerse ourselves in the language of worship and prayer and take refuge there as the righteous nation does in God. Meditate on the Psalms again and again. Rejoice in what has been done. Wrestle with your present circumstances. Request God to intercede and allow the language of the Psalms to permeate your mind. Can you talk with God? Can we delight in His Word? Are we immersed in what He has given us in the Psalms? I thank you for your attention this morning. We'll continue to study the Psalms together in my next further sermons. If there is any need, if you want to get to know God more adequately, if you want to come closer to Him, if you need to move sin out of your life in order to get closer to Him, then you can make that need known now. If you need to come and unite yourself, and you need to be bathed in that blood, and you need to immerse yourself in the blood of Christ, you have that opportunity to do so now. Please come forward while we stand and sing together.